The audio track you're about to listen to was recorded at Life Streams Christian Church in South Perth, Western Australia. For more information, please visit our website at www.lifestreamcc.com.
The Israelites were now living in exile in Babylon, far away from home. The Babylonian king, Nebuchadnezzar, selected a group of the most healthy, educated Israelite men to study the Babylonian language and culture for 3 years, then put them to work in his royal court. In this group, there were three men named Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They served the king faithfully, and the king placed them in powerful positions. Nebuchadnezzar wanted his people to worship him, so he built a 90-foot-tall gold statue of himself and commanded everyone in Babylon to worship it. But Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had committed themselves to only worshiping God. So when everyone else in Babylon bowed and worshiped to the statue, the three men stayed standing. Nebuchadnezzar was furious and sentenced them to be thrown into a fiery furnace and burned alive. The king ordered the furnace to be turned up to 7 times hotter than usual, so hot that even the guards who threw them into it were killed. Once the three men were inside, the king jumped up and asked his advisors, "Weren't there 3 men we threw in? I now see 4 men, and the fourth looks like a son of the gods." The king ordered the men to come out. When they did, everyone was amazed. Not only were they still alive, but they were in perfect condition. Not a hair on their heads had been burned. Once again, the king was impressed, and not only let the men go, but promoted them. Years later, a new king of Babylon named Darius came on the scene. A friend of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego named Daniel, who was also an Israelite, was so well liked by the new king that the other leaders in Babylon became jealous and hatched a plot to get rid of him. They tricked King Darius into signing a law that said Darius himself was a god and should be the only god anyone should worship for the next 30 days. Daniel heard about the law, but chose not to follow it. He went into an upstairs room in his home and looked out the windows facing toward Jerusalem. And he prayed to God 3 times a day. When the Babylonian leaders saw Daniel praying, they told King Darius, who was now forced to punish Daniel. He was arrested and thrown into a den full of lions overnight. In the morning, the den was opened, and Daniel was not only alive, there was not a scratch on him. Years later, after the Israelites had all been living in exile for 70 years, the Babylonians were overtaken by Persia, and the Israelites were allowed to return back to Jerusalem. They were going home.
Well, good morning, everyone. It's good that you've chosen to be here, because it's always better preaching to people. Every now and then I'll come in here and I'll practice my message, and then obviously there's no one here, and that always is way harder than when people are here. So thank you for turning up. Now, are you ready for some word this morning? It's good, because we've got a whole heap of word. We've got some fantastic, unbelievable, amazing stories that we're going to, and you've just had a little bit of a taste of that with our bumper this morning. Now, I do need to warn you, we've got a lot of reading. And I know that, you know, some of us aren't, we're not into so much reading. Well, can I say to you a couple of things? The stories are amazing, so they're going to keep your attention. I've also hired, not really hired, but I've got some two wonderful people that are going to help me with the reading. And I just simply encourage you to follow along. And you know how sometimes when you read a book and you go, what was that line about? And you get lost and then you have to go back. Well, sometimes having somebody read with you just really does help. So I encourage you to follow along as we read the word this morning. We've got a lot of reading. Now, it is an absolute privilege for me to be able to bring to you chapter 18. We're at chapter 18 which is fantastic, in our story, in our series called The Story. Now, The Story, I hope, for you, as you sit there and you come to church and you listen to the messages, I hope that you've enjoyed the story up to this point. And I reckon it's been amazing because the story is full of intrigue, it's full of drama, it's been full of action, full of adventure. And there's been times when, and today is no different, where I share a story from the Word and I think, that is unbelievable. So these stories are full of unbelievable miracles, full of love, full of betrayal, full of sin. It's an incredible story. And you know what? It's God's story. And the cool thing, even though it is God's story, it is our story. And it's fantastic to be able to hear our history, the history of God's people, and to know where we're up to today. And God is still speaking, which is fantastic. Now, I wonder what's impacted you out of the story so far. 18 weeks, they obviously haven't been concurrent, but we've spent 18 weeks on the story. I want you to quickly have a think and go, Lord, help me to remember something. And I want you to share with the person next to you maybe just something that you remember, a highlight, something that's impacted you. It could have been way back in week one where you heard the creation account and God walked in the garden with his, you know, peace de resistance. He's created Adam and Eve. It could be Hezekiah, could be Abraham, Sarah, whatever. Have a quick think. Turn to the person next to you and just go, all right, this is what's impacted me so far. Let's do that. And sorry, I'm sorry that I forgot to say, like, if today is your first Sunday, you're probably like, what the heck is he talking about? Sorry about that. Maybe the person close to you might be able to explain. But good to hear that there is some chatter. Good to hear that maybe some of what we've talked about in the last 18 weeks has impacted you in some way. Now, the thing that's impacted me the most, and I'd love to be able to go around and hear everybody's, but obviously we don't have the time, so I get to share mine. I love how everything in the story points to the one. Do you know what I mean by that? Everything in the story points to the one that's coming, and that's Jesus Christ. I love that about the story and the journey that we've been on up to this point. And it's very exciting because we've got Christmas just around the corner. Has anyone noticed? Christmas around the corner, it's heating up. We've got carols, we're planning. It's a busy time of the year. And if you haven't noticed, the story is about to culminate in the birth of the Savior of the world, which on the 22nd of December, we will be celebrating together Christmas. And, you know, last week, even as David was preaching, I just got this injection of energy and excitement because the reality is Christ is coming. And it started to become more and more apparent as we go deeper into the story. And today is no different because the stories of Daniel and his three mates, we see Jesus in these stories, which is fantastic. So let's have a look at Daniel. Let's have a look at his three mates. You've had a little bit of a taster in the bumper. If you want to open up your storybooks, page 249 in your storybooks, and or if you've got your Bible, Daniel 1. So let's get into it. Whole heap of amazing stories this morning. Please follow along with us. Daniel 1, verse 1. It says this: in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the articles from the temple of God. These he carried off to the temple of his little g god in Babylonia and put in the treasure house of his god. Then the king ordered Ashpenaz, chief of his court officials, to bring into the king's service some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility, young men without physical defect, handsome, showing an aptitude for every kind of learning, well-informed. I think that's just a fancy way of saying smart. Well-informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. He was to teach them the language and the literature of the Babylonians. And I think they might have looked a little bit like this, if I could have the next slide. So, you know, young, handsome, smart. But, yeah, it was a joke. Let's move on. The king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table, and they were to be trained for 3 years, and after that, they were to enter the king's service. Among those who were chosen were some from Judah: Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. The chief official gave them new names. To Daniel, the name Belteshazzar. Everyone say Belteshazzar. And to Hananiah, Shadrach. To Mishael, Meshach. And to Azariah, Abednego. Abednego. Oh, man, that's so hard to say. So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Abednego, that's in Victoria, isn't it? But anyway, here we have four, I'm hopeless with names, sorry, like you guys must sit there and cringe and go, it's not how you say it, but I do my best. But anyway, here we have four teenagers, the brightest and the finest amongst the youth in Judah, taken into exile, and they now find themselves as strangers in a strange land. I know this is really hard, but I want you to try and put yourself in their shoes. Try to imagine what it might feel like to be marched single file to the east into a foreign land, an unfamiliar territory. What must that have felt like? Stranger in a strange place. You know, something that helped me to think a little bit about that this week is you might have heard on the news or read in the newspaper that Australia has welcomed the first wave of Syrian refugees into our country. And it was just really good to see how impacted they were and how they just felt so excited to be in a new country. And they were so thankful. That's the word I'm trying to think of. They were so thankful that they had been given a new and a fresh start. But you know what? The reality is that they are strangers now in a strange land. Australia is not their home. And just like the Syrians, just like the story of the four teenagers that we're going to look at today, who find themselves strangers in a strange land, their story, believe it or not, actually relates to our story today. And it's amazing how God's story always intersects, always impacts where we're at, intersects our story. Now, let me explain how this might relate to us today. And it's from 1 Peter 1 in the Message. Peter writes this, he says, I, Peter, am an apostle on assignment by Jesus. I love that. The Messiah. Writing to, and here's the bit that I want you to get, writing to exiles scattered to the four winds, scattered out across the land to the four corners of the globe. Now, this verse very, very clearly states that God's people, that's you and I, God's people, are exiles. We're strangers in a strange land. Our home is not South Perth. Our home is not Como. Our home is not Victoria Park. It's not even Bentley or Wilson. It's not even WA or Perth. It's not even Australia. Our home is actually the New Jerusalem. Now let me go on. In 1 Peter 2, it says, friends, this world is not your home. How more plainly and simple can it get? This world is not your home, so don't make yourselves cozy in it. Don't indulge your ego at the expense of your soul. Live an exemplary life among the natives. so that your actions will refute their prejudices. Then they'll be won over to God's side and be there to join in the celebration when he arrives. Here we have Peter encouraging us as we live as strangers in a strange land, as we live as aliens and exiles. He's encouraging us to do what? He's encouraging us to live exemplary lives, lives that honor our God. We're to be in the world, but not of the world. And we do that so that we can bring glory to him. And you know what? That's exactly what Daniel and his three mates do in these three stories that we're going to spend some time in. So let's look at the first one. Let's pick up the story in Daniel chapter 1, verse 8. And Noella, if you could read, that would be fantastic.
But Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine. And he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself this way. Daniel then said to the guard whom the chief official had appointed over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael and Azariah, please test your servants for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat the royal food and treat your servants in accordance with what you see. So he agreed to this and tested them for 10 days. At the end of the 10 days, they looked healthier and better nourished than any of the young men who ate the royal food. So the guard took away their choice food and the wine they were to drink and gave them vegetables instead. At the end of the time set by the king to bring them into his service, the chief official presented them to Nebuchadnezzar. The king talked with them, and he found none equal to Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they entered the king's service. In every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king questioned them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters in his whole kingdom.
Wow. You know, God blesses Daniel and his three friends for a simple decision to make a stand over the food that they were being served up by the royal court. Now, as a result of that, God blesses them. As I said, they are healthier and they're wiser than the others. In fact, 10 times better than the cream. They are the cream of the crop. Now, what can we apply here? How might this intersect our stories? Well, let me suggest this. You know, the Bible says a lot about food and the food that we eat. The Bible also says that our bodies are the temple of what? The Holy Spirit. And we must care for them. We've been given our bodies to steward and to look after. And I was thinking, well, why? Well, you know, you can jump into Romans 12:1 there, and there's that sort of classic worship verses. But simply put, they're tools for worship. Our bodies are a tool for worship. We've been created to worship. But they're also instruments for doing his will. They're almost like a tool that he's given us so that we can go about glorifying him in our world. However, the reality is, and this gets back to this whole thing of strangers in a strange land, right? The reality is that our culture, or this strange land that we live in, it offers us another type of diet. A diet of dodgy business practices, a diet of all sorts of dodgy things, activities, practices. And I want to pick on one thing this morning, and I've called it the Krispy Kreme of the world's diet. Do you know Krispy Kremes? I absolutely love those donuts. They're beautiful. But you know what? They're not great for you. Hey, you can't eat heaps of them. I reckon I could eat a whole box really easily. But it's not that good. It's not good for you. So the one that I'm picking on this morning is the Krispy Kreme of the world's diet, and I believe that is gossip. Gossip. Gossip is insidious. And it is so easy to get caught up in. Would you agree? So easy. Let me throw you a couple of questions just to see where you might be at with this Krispy Kreme of the Krispy Kreme of the world's diet. I wonder this. I wonder, is my name, safe in your mouth? And then let me throw that at me. Is your name safe in my mouth? Or is your name safe in your mate's mouth, your friend's mouth? Now, the reality is you can't control what I say or what your friends say. What you can control is what comes out of your mouth. Are your friend's name safe on your mouth? Is my name safe on your mouth? I hope you understand what I'm trying to say there. You know, our world pigs out on gossip. You know, the whole media is based on it. We, as Christ followers, we have to refuse to eat the world's diet. We must not, as it said in 1 Peter, we must not indulge our ego at the expense of our soul. And the reality is, gossip, at the heart of gossip, is really just the feeding of your ego, feeding of my ego. And I can't do that at the expense of my soul. So if you can't say something about your mate to their face, then you probably shouldn't say it. Or if you've got an issue with someone, then you should probably go to speak to them before you go and speak to your girlfriends or to the people in your world. It's insidious. Gossip is not good. You know, church, we can't diet on what the world offers. We must diet on God's word, and we must allow Him, His Spirit, to nurture us and to grow our kingdom lives. And that's what I pray. But we need to move on. The next amazing story is in Daniel 3, verse 1. And Brady, you're going to read that for us, mate. Thanks.
King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold, 60 cubits high and 6 cubits wide, and set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. He then summoned the satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the other provincial officials to come to the dedication of the image he had set up. So the satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the other provincial officials assembled for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up, and they stood before it. Then the herald loudly proclaimed, "Nations and peoples of every language, this is what you are commanded to do. As soon as you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipe, and all kinds of music, you must fall down and worship the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. Whoever does not fall down and worship will immediately be thrown into a blazing furnace."
So, here we have an interesting predicament. Here we have some of King Nebuchadnezzar's officials jealous of Daniel's three mates. And here they see an opportunity. They see an opportunity, and at the bottom line of this, it's persecution. They see an opportunity to dob on them, to tell the king, and they did. And upon finding out that they were not bowing down to his statue, the scriptures say that the king was furious with rage, and he summoned them and he challenged them on why they were not bowing down. Back to Brett.
Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to him, "King Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to deliver us from it, and he will deliver us from your majesty's hand. But even if he does not, we want you to know, your majesty, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up."
Now that's a gutsy move, hey? What I want you to notice there is verse 18 where it says, and this really demonstrates the faith of these guys. It says there, "But even if he doesn't, we want you to know we're going to stand." So regardless of what God does, We are putting our trust and our faith in him, and we are going to stand. I wonder, and again, it's really hard to put yourself into their shoes, but I wonder what you would have done. I mean, it's really hard for me to answer that because the reality is we live in a country where persecution is probably a little bit more subtle. You know, we don't get threatened with, hey, bow down. If you don't bow down, you're getting chucked in the oven. We don't get that, do we? But I wonder what you would do if you're faced with that kind of thing. And so we read there as punishment, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego thrown into a fiery furnace. And the furnace, as we heard on the bumper, was turned up 7 times hotter. And it was so hot that it burnt up the guards as they threw the 3 men into the furnace. Thanks, Brett.
Then King Nebuchadnezzar leapt to his feet in amazement and asked his advisers, "Weren't there 3 men that we tied up and threw into the fire?" They replied, "Certainly, yet, Your Majesty." He said, "Look, I see 4 men walking around in the fire, unbound and unharmed, and the fourth looks like a son of the gods."
The fourth looks like the son of gods. What's that on? What's all that about? There's 4 in there. And then as I was thinking about that during the week, I'm thinking, I wonder what they were doing, you know. They're in this fiery furnace. Like, I don't know, maybe if the 4 men that were in that picture I showed you earlier, if we were all in there, we probably would have been high-fiving each other and doing the, you know, the chest bumps, and we would have been just like, our God is saving us. I wonder what they were doing. Thanks, Brett.
Nebuchadnezzar then approached the opening of the blazing furnace and shouted, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out, come here." So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out of the fire, and the satraps, prefects, governors, and royal advisors crowded around them. They saw that the fire had not harmed their bodies, nor was a hair of their head singed. Their robes were not scorched, and there was no smell of fire on them. Ooh, we're going again. Then Nebuchadnezzar said, "Praise be to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and rescued his servants. They trusted in him and defied the king's command and were willing to give up their lives rather than serve or worship any god except their own God."
So they trusted him. They trusted God. What an incredible story, hey? You know, it's one of those stories that you just go, that is unbelievable. Physically and scientifically, that can't happen. Unbelievable. Our God is an awesome God. Now, we've got to move on. We've got one more mini story that I want us to look at. Let me just set the scene. By this time, so we're going to jump down to Daniel 6. By this time, the Persian king, King Darius, had overthrown and conquered the Babylonians. So there's a new king in town. So let's read Daniel 6. And it goes this. It says, "It pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps to rule throughout the kingdom, with 3 administrators over them, one of whom was Daniel." So Daniel enters back into the story. "The satraps were made accountable to them so that the king might not suffer loss. Now Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities," remember, described earlier as 10 times better, "that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. And at this, the administrators and the satraps tried to find grounds for charge against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs, but they were unable to do so because Daniel was a man of integrity. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. Finally, these men said, 'We will never find any basis for charges against this man, Daniel, unless it has something to do with the law of his God.'" Very interesting, hey? I think that verse there really sums up what is at the heart of people wanting to persecute people in the church. Let's target their faith. Let's target their trust in God. That's how we're going to get them. But what we've got on, what we've got going here is Darius's officials again, jealous of Daniel, 10 times better than them, and they plot to trap him by convincing Darius to have all people pray to him for 30 days. Now, Daniel, being a man of God, his habit was to open his window towards Jerusalem and to pray to his God. And the officials, well, they get wind of this. They think, oh, we've got a good way to get this guy. We're going to dob on him. We're going to dob on him. We're going to persecute him. And we're going to dob on Daniel. And consequently, they tell the king. And then it goes on in verse 16. It says, so the king gave the order. And this is what happens. And they brought Daniel and they threw him into the lion's den. The king said to Daniel, may your God, whom you serve continually, rescue you. Interesting. You know, what I want you to get as I read some more of this is this idea that the king obviously had a soft spot for Daniel. Because during the night, as Daniel's in the lion den, it says that the king could not eat and he could not sleep because he was obviously worried about Daniel. Goes on in verse 19. At the first light of dawn, the king got up and hurried to the lion's den. When he came near the den, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice. Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to rescue you from the lions? And Daniel answered, may the king live forever. My God sent his angel, and he shut the mouths of the lions. They have not hurt me, because I was found innocent in his sight, nor have I ever done any wrong before you, your majesty. Then the king was overjoyed. You know, that doesn't sound like a king who wanted Daniel dead, hey? King was overjoyed and gave orders to lift Daniel out of the den. And when Daniel was lifted from the den, no wound was found on him because he had trusted his God. No wound, no harm had come on Daniel because he had trusted in his God. And because Daniel trusted in God, God was glorified among the nations. You remember we read 1 Peter, you need to live as strangers in a strange land, not to make yourselves look good, but to glorify me. And so that my name will be renowned throughout the world. And that's what's exactly going on here. Verse 25, it says, King Darius wrote to all the nations and peoples of every language in all the earth. I don't think that would have been a small undertaking. May you prosper greatly. I issue a decree that in every part of my kingdom, people must fear and reverence the God of Daniel. For he is the living God and he endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. I think there's a song we sing about that. Verse 27, he rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions. And then verse 28, it says, so Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. Now, what essentially the king is saying there to the people of the world is that Daniel's God is the one true God. What an incredible story. Hey, that's unbelievable, isn't it? Physically impossible. You chuck a piece of flesh into a lion's den, that thing should be ravaged. But because of supernatural act of God, because our God is the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, he not even a scar, not even a scratch on his body. What a cracker of a story. Awesome. Well, so what? So what? Three amazing stories. Daniel and his three mates. So what? How does this story, how does God's story interact and intersect with our story? Well, can I suggest a couple of things in closing? Firstly, did you know that you serve God? If you are a Christ follower, you serve God 24/7 in whatever situation you go into. Did you know that you serve God where you work? Did you know that you serve God where you go to school? Did you know that if you're in university, that's where you serve God? And I wonder, and I'm sure that this happens quite a lot. I wonder what you do when you are presented with something that's dodgy. You know, maybe a boss that says, hey, I need you to do this. And you know deep down in your spirit that it's not what God wants. It's not a part of God's plan for you. What do you do? What do you do when you're asked to do something that goes against His will for you? And often, the reality is that if we choose in that moment to make a stand, we know that there could be dire consequences. You know, you may lose your job. That's a reality. You may lose your job, or you may even be thrown into a metaphoric, fiery, relational furnace. Do you know what I'm talking about there? You make a stand, and then all of a sudden, everybody turns on you, and you're just the goody-two-shoe Christian. That's what happens when you make a stand. It's tough to make a stand. It's tough. I know how hard it is to make a stand. It is way easier to go with the flow. It's way easier to not stand out. It's way easier to keep your head down so it doesn't get shot off. It's way easier to just not make a scene, isn't it? But I wonder, will you bow down? Will you bow down to those gold statues that you have been told to bow down and worship to? Will you entertain gossip in your friendship circle? Or will you say, hey, hang on a minute. Will you make a stand? And will you say, hey, is that something that you should potentially be saying to that person? Because I don't really want to hear this. And if you've done that in Christian circles or life groups or whatever, that is a hard thing to do. But we've got to stand. We've got to stand against that insidious thing called gossip. Will you bow down or will you show courage? Just like the four men in our story today, they showed incredible courage. They said, I stand. I will stand. We will stand. We will trust in our God. We will trust because we believe that He will deliver us. And even if we die, even if we aren't delivered, we will still trust in Him because we know that He will ultimately rescue us. Because we know that we are strangers in a strange world. We are not a part of this world. And that's really important because I don't know about you, but you're in a tough situation and you're praying your guts out, God, deliver me from this. And He doesn't answer in the way that I think He should. You know, take it away. He doesn't take it away. You know what? That happens sometimes. Because the reality is we don't, or things don't work out always the way that we think that it should. Will you stand? Church, will you stand? Will you stand regardless of the outcome? It's worth thinking about. But there's one more thing that I want to say. I wonder who you think was the fourth person in that fiery furnace. Remember the king looking into it and he sees there's four people in there? Who do you think that was? Now, the reality is that there's been a lot of ink spilt over this one. Some commentators believe that it was an angel, maybe even the angel Gabriel sent to be with those three men as they went through that horrific experience. But you know what the most people believe it is? They believe it's Jesus. They believe, and I'm going to read it out to you because I don't want to get this wrong. They believe it was the pre-incarnate visitation of Jesus. Wow. Jesus, right there in that furnace with Shadrach, Meshach, and the other guy. And just as Jesus was with those men in that fiery furnace at that time, Jesus promises to be with us as we go through those relational fiery furnaces, as we are forced to stand up against gossip, or we are chucked into a metaphoric lion's den. Jesus says in Matthew 28, verse 20, after he sends us out, as he commissions us to go and to make him famous in the world, he says this, "I am with you always to the very end of this age." I mean, how comforting is that? Jesus is with us. And church, making a stand is hard. But the reality is it's possible, and it's made possible. It's possible for us to live as strangers in a strange land through the presence and the power of Jesus. We can't do this in our own strength. The presence and the power of Jesus. It's through His Spirit that we can be in the world and not of the world. Can I encourage you? Can I urge you to trust in Him? To trust in Him every single day as you stand in your home, as you stand in your workplace, and as you stand in your school or your university. I'm wondering whether we stand right now. Can we stand, church? I think it's really appropriate that we respond this morning in worship. And we're going to sing the stand again. These are powerful words. Would you sing from the depths of your heart? Will you sing as if you mean the words that you're about to sing? Let's worship.